Okay, one more Sephardi Ashkenazi topic, and that is, again, still in the afterglow of Nathan Payman's wedding, for those who went. There is no yichud at a Sephardi wedding, or traditionally there hasn't been yichud at a Sephardi wedding. I discovered this with my first Sephardi Talmud to get married. I remember it was a Sephardi Masada Kiddushin, and the Masada Kiddushin took all seven brachos under the chuppah, which is also typically the Sephardi tradition, and it's really the Ashkenazi tradition also, but somehow at some point that changed. Maybe that's a topic for a different time. But he asked me to be one of the 8-day Kiddushin. I was an 8 Kiddushin. And then after the chuppah, they danced the chassan and kala to the yichud room, and they got right to the door of the yichud room in Marina Del Rey, I remember, and the chassan said, "We're Sephardic, we don't have yichud anyway," and they just continued dancing for a while because they don't do yichud. So that issue of why it is that Sephardim don't do yichud at the wedding is a perplexing issue, and it's something that I think is a fascinating discussion. The Rambam holds, as we've discussed a few times already this summer, the Rambam holds that chuppah is defined as yichud, nisuin is defined as yichud, and one would therefore think that Sephardim would be especially careful to have yichud after the chuppah because that is the definition of nisuin. That's how they get married. However, the common Sephardic practice, like we said, is not to have yichud. So let's discuss why it should be. And by the way, that practice goes way back to the Tshuvas HaRadvaz already records such a practice. So the question is, why should this minhag be kept? And then maybe we'll go through some of the reasons that some suggest that maybe the minhag should be changed at this time. And then we'll try to come to some halachic conclusion. So why to keep this minhag? So the list of Sephardic Gedolim that insist that Sephardim should not have yichud at the wedding is long and impressive. Rav Ezra Atiya in the Tshuvas Yaskel Avdi, Chelek Zayin Eben Ezra Simen Yud, Rav Vadi Yosef in Yechavidas, Chelek Hei Simen Samach Beis, Rav Ben-Zion Abba Shaul is quoted as well, saying the same thing, the Maimur Mordechai, Rav Mordechai Elio in his Tshuvas Maimur Mordechai, Chelek Beis Eben Ezra Simen Vav, Rav David HaLevi in the Tshuvas Asei L'Charav, Chelek Dalet Simen Nun Hei, Rav Meisas, all of these Sephardic Adolim say that they should continue with the Sephardic tradition. Rav Yitzchak Yosef wrote an article in the Torah journal Tchumen in the 31st edition of Tchumen where he says that it's a breach of tznius to have a chassan and kala go into a room alone with everybody watching them. The whole world is going to dance them to this room, and then they're going to go into a room all alone and lock the door behind them. What kind of tznius is that? Everyone knows that they're going into a room in privacy. That's not appropriate. This probably, his idea is probably that it's an extension of what the Gemara in Kesubas tells us, that a kol yodin kal lam nichnas al chuppah, that everybody knows what's going to happen on the night of a wedding. But kala menavil piv v'yotzei davar magunami piv, someone who speaks about such things, someone who tries to focus on such things, even if he has a gzar din shal shivim shana l'tova, is nepach alav l'ra'a. Even if he has a gzar din of 70 good years for speaking about such things, the gzar din is going to change to 70 bad years. So Rav Yitzchak Yosef thinks it's just inappropriate that this is going to be something that's done in such a public way. Now, one could argue on the flip side that, no, they're going into a room together and everybody knows they're not going to be having tashmish because they're coming out 10 minutes later and they have a wedding to celebrate. Everybody knows that they just want to spend some time together before they go and celebrate with all the guests. And that does not seem to be at all a breach of tznius. But anyway, that's the argument, that one of the arguments Rav Yitzchak Yosef makes. The stronger argument, and the one that is more prevalent, is that the reason that Sephardim don't do yichud at the wedding is because dafka, because it completes the nisuin, and since it completes the nisuin according to the Rambam and the Mechaber, she would then need to cover her hair if they had yichud, and most kalas don't want to cover their hair at the wedding, so she would need to put on a sheitel right away. She would need to put on a tichel or something right away at the yichud, and most women do not want to be covering their hair at their wedding, so they wait till after the wedding to complete the marriage so that they won't have to cover their hair until afterwards. Rabbi Willig often points out that really full hair covering is only required after Bia Rishona. It's not Nisuin that's the Mechayev of hair covering. There's a major machlokes haposkim. There are poskim that hold that from Erusin and on, you already need full hair covering, and therefore a kala's got to even go to the chuppah, what march down the aisle, with a full hair covering. There are those that suggest that it's only at Nisuin, and then Rav Willig suggests, and many others, that it's only from the Bia Rishona, because the chiyuv to cover a hair is derived from the Psukim Parshas Naso about a sota, and a woman cannot become a sota until Bias Mitzvah, so perhaps the covering of the hair, the obligation begins at the Bias Mitzvah. So the only requirement at the wedding itself to have any sort of hair covering at the wedding itself itself is based on the description that the Mishnayos have in Maseches Ksubos of a kalah that's yotzei bihinuma, that there's some sort of head covering that's indicative of being a kalah. So that's why Rav Shechter recommends to kalahs that they should wear their veil throughout the wedding, not over their face, but on their head, that the veil should be there, that there should be some form of hair of head covering, even though obviously the majority of their hair is visible, but at least if someone is looking at the kala, they should be able to say, oh, something is on her head. There are different, you know, every kala tries to negotiate this down, right? Meaning, what if it's just a headband? What if a barrette? What if, you know, there's a piece of dirt somewhere in my hair? You know, so some hairspray. Is that good? But nevertheless, there should be some sort of head covering, but not because of the normal din of head covering, but because of this din, this idea of Yotzei being Numa. Now, in general, as we mentioned, the question of when a kala has to start covering her hair is a major machlokas. From Moshe derives from the Gemara that as long as she's still wearing her gown, she has the same basula, she has a shame basula, and doesn't have to cover her hair, which is why many poskim will say that when the kala leaves the wedding hall, if she changes out of her wedding gown, at that point she should start covering her hair once she leaves the wedding, because she's already taking off her gown and putting on regular civilian clothing, so at that point she should already cover her hair. Other Ashkenazi poskim disagree with Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Sternbach says that she has to cover her hair immediately already at the time of Kiddushin. He has a couple of tshuvas about this, and the tshuvas van Hagos, Chelek Dalet, Simen, Reish Pei Zayin, Oschaf Aleph, and Reish Sadi Dalet, and Chelek Hei, Simen, Shin Lamed Dalet. There's Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is quoted in Emes Yaakov, in Eben Ezer, Simen Samach Beis, in footnote number 25, that only that after the Yichud Room the Kala has to cover the hair, and that's what the Sephardic opinion assumes, that since after the Yichud Room she would have to cover her hair. It's not totally on the Bia, it's not totally on the Kiddushin, it's totally on the Yichud, so they delay doing the Yichud until afterwards. That's the explanation that is given for the Minhag. Whatever explanation you're going to give, whether it's because of a breach of Tznius, whether it's because of the covering the hair issue, whatever explanation you're going to give, there's no doubt that this has been Sephardic practice for a very long time. So why is there any compelling reason not to keep this minhag? So first of all, it's very hard to delay the chuppah for many hours after the brachos. Meaning one argument against this minhag is you say seven brachos under the chuppah that are about nisuin, and then you're going to do nisuin 6 hours later after they finish dancing and everything else and the whole suda and they go home. That's when you're going to complete the nisuin. So if Yitzchak Yosef in his article responds that the brachos of nisuin are not brachos mitzvah, they're brachos shevach. So there is no problem of hefsik when it comes to brachos shevach. One could could counter argue that there's no fundamental problem of hefsik, but there's still even brachos shevach should have some shaychus, should have some connection to the thing that you are being mishabeach about. Meaning you don't just say a bracha on a rainbow right now, even though you haven't seen a rainbow in 2 weeks, right? You brachos shevach still connects in some way to that which you are being mishabeach about. Rav Shechter in Bikve Atzon, Simon Lamentes, Os Gimel, says, points out the Magen Avram in Simon Reish Vav, Sivkan Gimel, and quotes the Mizrahi, not to be mafsik between the Birchus Nisun and the Yichud, that we actually do have to be careful about a hefsik between the Birchus Nisun and the Yichud. Rav Shechter therefore opposes the practice of having a chazan sing Shir HaMalos at that point after the Nisuin and before the Yichud, and the practice to hold a drush at that point after the Birchus Nisuin and before the Yichud. It used to be a common thing that rabbis would speak under chuppas. Now Rabbi Yudin speaks under chuppas, but it used to be a common thing that all rabbis would speak under chuppas. So the question is, when should you time that drush? At what point during the wedding ceremony should that be? So it used to be very common that rabbis would do it at the very end of the chuppah, after the Birchus Nisuin. So Shechter said that's improper, because right after the brachos, it should be immediate that you go to the Yichud room. Rav Shechter quotes the lashon of the Maharil, that meritzim es hachasen ves hakala l'cheder Yichud. They should run the chasen and kala to the Yichud room. Typically, it's not what's done. They dance slowly, and that's after lots of hugs and mazel tovs are happening happen under the chuppah before the team of single girls and their mothers run to the chuppah to pray. That's a different time in halacha story. But you never seen that? Look, you'll see. So it doesn't. You don't get the impression that they are meritzim. Rav Willick says meritzim. They should run them out of there because everyone's hugging and kissing. And you end up hugging and kissing the wrong people. So you want to get them out of there as quick as possible. So leaving aside all of this consideration, but nevertheless. Rav Shachter likes to quote that Alash on the Maril. Rav Shachter is even makbid not to say one of the brachos under the chuppah if there's not going to be yichud soon after, because he holds it's chashash bracha levatala, that there's going to be such a hefsik. So if a Sephardi Talmud will say, can I honor a Rebbe with one of the brachos under the chuppah, he'll ask, is there going to be yichud at the wedding? And if they say no, he'll say, I'd rather not. I'd rather not say the bracha, because he's choshesh that it's a bracha levatala. The it's interesting. Mordechai Javaheri, who's one of the Rav Shachter's Talmidim, who's wrote a little kuntros in advance of his wedding about Divrei Halacha and Divrei Drush relating to a wedding. So he writes that not convinced by Rav Avadia, Harav Shachter in Beit Ve'atzon believes that it would be too long of a hefsik to recite Shavuot Brachos under the chuppah and only perform the yichud hours later. Therefore, when attending the weddings of his Sephardic students, he only agrees to recite Birchas Harisin, but not the Sheva Brachos. Despite his stringent opinion, this is the part I do not know, he does not impose it on his students. In fact, on one such occasion, at Birchas HaMazon of Rav Ike Sultan's wedding, Rav Shachter was passed the microphone to recite one of the Sheva Brachos, and he did. Immediately afterwards, we inquired why he recited the Bracha, and he said that he was relying on Chacham Avadia. As it seems, he was willing to let go of his stringent position in order not to embarrass anyone. Meaning, when asked in advance, he would say, "I'm choshesh brach levatala," but given the microphone on the spot, he doesn't want to embarrass anybody to suggest publicly that all these brachos are brachos levatala. I don't know how any of you could be saying them. So he relies on the sheet of Rav Avadia that you're allowed to say those brachos. Another argument to do away with the Sephardic practice is that they make shavu brachos at the end of the Su'udah, which is very strange if they don't have Nisuin yet. If they haven't had Yichud yet, how are they even making a Shavu Brachos on, you know, after the meal, which is already, meaning it says you're in Shavu Brachos week already. So that's a little bit difficult. Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef says that, no, for those purposes, for the purposes of those Brachos, we rely on the on one of the other Shitos as to what Nisuin is. Maybe being under the Chuppah is Nisuin, maybe wrapping themselves in the Talis, like a Sephardic Chassan and Kala, and Yekki Chassan and Kala also do, wrap themselves in the Talis. Maybe that's considered Nisuin. So we could rely on that. Another reason that they suggest to perhaps change the minhag is that many mixed marriages between Sfardim and Ashkenazim, the Kala finds it very disappointing, and the guests find it very confusing if there is no Yichud. And very often you'll have a Chassan teacher or a Kala teacher, more often a Kala teacher, that tells the Kala how it's emotionally healthy and she needs the time alone with her husband at that time, and otherwise it's going to be too much for her to handle. It's going to be too overwhelming for her. So for those reasons, they try to introduce yichud even at a Sephardic wedding in violation of Sephardic tradition. So the halacha lemaisa, the Sephardic tradition is pretty clear on this, and l'chora should be maintained. Rabbi Jachter quotes Rav Levi from Gush, who suggests that Sephardim should change their practice, and in fact, I think he's a Rosh Kolel in Gush, and he wrote a response to Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef's piece. Rabbi Jachter suggests maybe a compromise, that you could do yichud without edim, and leave the door unlocked, so they could keep up the tzura of a yichud room without actually having the halachic qualifications of yichud. Or you could put someone else in the room, like we would do at a chuppas nida, where you put a child in the room or something like that, so you could have somewhat of a tzura of yichud without having the actual yichud. So Rabbi Jachter Sefer, he quotes Mordechai Javaheri, that Rav Avadia was the extra person in the yichud room at one of his granddaughter's weddings, that even Rav Avadia allowed for such a fake tzura of yichud, despite the fact that it's Rav Yitzchak Yosef, Rav Avadia's son, who's adamantly against this, says that we're smart and we don't do yichud. So I texted Rabbi Javaheri this morning. I asked him, where did you hear that from? That Rav Vadia was, he said that Ezra Dweck told him that at his parents' wedding, Ezra Dweck is a great grandson of Rav Vadia, DRS alumnus. He said that that at his parents' wedding, there was the Rav Vadia was hiding in the yichud room. I don't know if that makes it healthier or less healthy for the college. He finally gets to the yichud room and there's Rav Vadia, but nevertheless, he kept up such a tzura of yichud. So Rabbi Javaheri writes that though it has become commonplace for Sfardim to perform a yichud room, whether by choice or by peer pressure, one should understand that Sephardic heritage is rich with tradition spanning generations. Fear of standing out in today's society is no reason to let go and blend in, especially when the Sephardic custom is firmly rooted in halachic literature and shared among so many different communities, including Iraqis, Persians, Moroccans, Tunisians, and Syrians. So I would agree with that, that l'chora, each community should follow their tradition. And although an Ashkenazi girl growing up may have always imagined that she would have a yichud room, probably, there's a lot of things that she imagined her life would look like that are going to change when she marries a Sephardi guy, and that's part of the beauty of the different cultures that we have within Yiddishkeit. But l'chore, each community should be proud of their tradition and continue to observe their proper traditions. Okay.